This morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 1, Text Number 6. The sages of Naimisharanya were very eager to hear the conversations between Sukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit. So we're just beginning now that conversation. Sukadeva Goswami, first of all, praises the question. The questions of Sukha of Parikshit Maharaj, as also of the sages of Naimisharanya, have been praised as being highly beneficial. Even the questions themselves are beneficial for the whole of human society because they relate to the personality of Godhead. Just hearing the questions purifies one. The questions are asked with pure intention. There is no ulterior motive. The intention is simply to please the Lord. Their questions, as well as the answers, as well as their activities, should be, in that sense, they should be actually for the pleasure of the Lord. So hearing these questions and answers in the Srimad Bhagavatam is the process of Shravanam Kirtanam, the process of purifying our hearts, of clearing up all of our doubts. Just like the Bhagavatam is full of prayers, notable prayers, full of prayers, but every canto has several very notable prayers within it, just like this first canto, well, not just the third canto. There are prayers of creative potency for Lord Brahma. But in the first canto, we find the prayers of Queen Kunti. But there are different prayers in the first canto, Uttara, and so on. Different prayers which they offer to the Lord for various reasons. But they're all ultimately meant for the pleasure of the Lord. They're all ultimately meant for that purpose, to focus everything on Krishna, to understand Krishna's position. So the questions are all there to help. Maybe, in many cases, Parikshit Maharaj himself, a self-realized soul, they ask questions, just like Arjuna is asking questions for our benefit. They ask the perfect questions for our benefit, so that we can actually, we may not think of those questions or be even willing to ask such questions, but they ask the questions, and then Krishna or the pure devotees of the Lord give the answer for our benefit also. Krishna wants to please his devotees, the devotee wants to please Krishna. So today's verse, Sukadeva Goswami, and begins. Please repeat. Shri Shuko Vacha, Yada Tu Raja Svasutan Asadun Pushnan Na Dharmena Vinashta Vrishtihi Bratur Yavishtasya Sutan Vibandun Pravesha Laksha Bhavane Dadaha Shishuku Vacha Yadatu Raja Susatana Sadun Pushnan Dharmena Vinashta Drishti Ratoya Vishtasya Sutan Vibadhun Pavesha Laksha Bhavane Dadaha Shri Shuku Vacha Yadatu Raja Susatana Sadun Krishna dharmena vinashta drishtihi Rato Yavishtasya Sutan Vibandun Pravesha Laksha Bhavane Dadaha Shishuku Vasha Yadatu Rajasva Sutana Sadhun Pushnana Dharmena Vinashta Drishtihi Pratoya Vishtasya Sutan Vibandun Pravesha Laksha Bhavane Dadaha Shishuku Vacha Yadatu Rajasva Sutan Asadu Pushnana Dharmena Vinashta Drishtihi Pratoya Vishtasya Sutan Vibandun Pravesha Laksha Bhavane Dadaha Shishukavacha Shishukadeva Goswami said Yada when to but Raja King Dhritarashtra Svasutan his own sons, Asadun, dishonest, Pushnan, nourishing, Na, never, Dharmena, on the right path, Vinashta Drishtihi, one who has lost his insight, Bratuhu, of his brother, Yavishtasya, younger, Sutan, sons, Vibandun, having no guardian or father, Pravesha, made to enter, Laksha, lacquer, Bhavane, in the house, Dadaha, set on fire. Translation and purport. Srila Prabhupada. Shri Sukadeva Goswami said, King Dhritarashtra became blind under the influence of impious desires to nourish his dishonest sons, and thus he set fire to the lacquer house to burn his fatherless nephews, the Pandavas. This is just like, say, a prelude to the subject matter. Of the discussions, which will lead up to the discussions between Maitreya and Vidura. Dhritarashtra was blind from birth. This is the purport. I think it's written on the board. Is that correct? English?
Yes.
Don't need to repeat. Dhritarashtra was blind from birth, but his blindness in committing impious activities to support his dishonest sons was a greater blindness than his physical lack of eyesight. The physical lack of sight does not bar one from spiritual progress. But when one is blind spiritually, even though physically fit, that blindness is dangerously detrimental to the progressive path of human life. End of purport. This is the behavior of the one who is spiritually blind. Dhritarashtra, his sons, primarily Duryodhana and Dushasana, and the other brothers, were always envious of the Pandavas. There was a constant animosity between them. And one of the instances which is mentioned here, and maybe others, will also be mentioned here. But this one, they're being sent to the house of lacquer. Interesting event, how one tries to get rid of, by covering over or by various means, get rid of one's enemies. One thinks that one's enemies are external. We often think like that too. We sometimes think that the problems are external. This is blindness. This is blindness. This is spiritual blindness. We think that the problems are external, mental and physical. Sure, they may be there, but that's just a result of the interaction of the modes of nature acting accordingly under the direction of Krishna, who is reciprocating with their karma. So we think that that's the problem, and we desire to adjust, and by adjustment of externals we think that we'll be satisfied. Neither that satisfies us, neither we can do it. We make the endeavor, and if Krishna wills, he allows it to happen. But even if we will, sometimes it does not happen. It backfires or whatever. And even if it happens, it doesn't necessarily make us happy. Just like in this particular incident, Duryodhana thought, oh, we'll make it look very nice. We'll invite our cousins to go to this nice, you know, palatial country house, which they constructed. I can't remember, what's that fellow's name, the officer of King Dhritarashtra, begins with P, who did all the arrangements there. He built this house, which was looked perfectly nice, but all inside all the panels was lacquer and various flammable items, so many things. And the plan was on a certain day that he would set fire to the house. Mysteriously, he would escape, but the Pandavas would all be burned to death. However, it was foiled, as you may know. Vidura, of course, is an expert, and he can understand the psychology of others. So he warned the Pandavas about the likelihood of danger, and he gave them various indications also, including examples like, you know, like a mole or something, which always makes a tunnel in case there's any danger so that it can escape. So he did various warnings. So they got the message. They realized what was going to happen. And then Vidura sent a very expert tunnel maker. So for 1 month, that expert tunnel maker was tunneling in the middle of the night incognito from their bedroom to because they were there for some time. And they used to wander around, checking out the whole area, getting to know exactly what was going on, and watching everything. And he built it secretly, without anyone's knowledge, so that they could escape to the chosen place if they wished. So when that day was coming, they weren't sure. But Yudhishthira, being a very clever diplomat, very expert, he saw that this, whatever his name was, his officer, who was receiving them so nicely, was treating them like his own sons, practically, you know, pampering them in every way. And there's another sign of danger when someone does that. So then he had already chosen the set date. So on that, but Yudhishthira was very clever. He noted that the storeroom was getting emptier and emptier. So he knew this was a sign that the day was coming. He could tell by the signs. And then, so that time Yudhishthira asked if they could arrange a big feast. So they prepared pretty much everything that was left. This officer arranged everything. They cooked a wonderful feast for the Pandavas, and they particularly fed to the neck this particular officer as well. They made him eat and drink. Bhima especially made him drink lots of nice liquor, and he became very intoxicated and overeating, and he was so tired they took him and they put him in his bed, and he went fast asleep. So meanwhile they took that now as a time. Then all the Pandavas went down the tunnel, and Bhima stayed behind, and as she described it, actually, that Bhima set fire to the place, because, you know, that was how it was meant to be. And they went down the tunnels, and that fellow got burned up. And, of course, everyone thought that the Pandavas had also died in that house of lack, but they had escaped, and they were off. So this way, you know, we may try to, you know, trick our way to fulfill our material desires, and we think, yes. But our real enemy is not that. Duryodhana may think that the Pandavas or whoever it is his enemy. But the real enemy, we know who our real enemies are. They're within. They're not without. They're all within us. It's our perception of the world. because we see ourselves in the center, therefore we're envious, or we're lusty, we're greedy, we get angry with others. The whole Bhagavatam is also there with talk about, you know, how to control anger, this, that, the other. And generally we just take some external techniques, you know, count 1, 2, 3, 4 before you scream, or whatever it is. And different things that may be useful to a certain extent, but they're only, you know, just to make it possible to really do something about it. The real solution is not external. Get rid of this one, get rid of that one. Problem around here is this one and that one. You know, get rid of him and everything will be all right. My problems will be solved. But that's not what's going on. Krishna's arranging these situations to give us a chance to get rid of our real enemies, which are who are within. Those attitudes, those coverings which we all have, which are really born of the false ego. They're simply reflections of pure qualities. And they can be channeled, mostly. Anger, you know, it's like Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj when he was sometime talking with some of his disciples, they were asking, should we use anger against those who are envious of the Lord? Is the way we should channel our anger? Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj said, yes, we should use anger against those who are envious. But first we have to see who is that, who is envious. And when we look at our own selves, I find no one more envious than myself. So who do I use anger to? We're very keen to use it on others. Preach, so to say, preach. But we have to preach to ourselves. We have to see our own selves. Otherwise it's no effect. There's no change of heart. Change of heart has to become, we can't help others if we're not helping ourselves. Same thing with all these various things. How to channel them in Krishna service in the proper way. The real enemy is within our own heart. This is Rupa Goswami or Prahlad Maharaj, they're all pointing these points out to us and how to get to the root problem. How to cleanse our perception, as Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj said, it's only possible by exposing ourselves to the transcendental sound vibration of Krishna Gitan. That's the process of cleansing of this false ego, putting Krishna in the center, deity worship, putting Krishna in the center, because we can still be completely false egotistic. We can still be working on the platform of ahankara at every stage, but that's the process. And the right association and willing to take the necessary, you could say, maybe little chastisements, not necessarily verbal, but in various ways, how Krishna works to release us from this false identification or this false ego, to release us. And Prabhupada has established this movement for that purpose. It's not just a movement which has been established simply to make a nice living or lifestyle. It's not just here so we can, you know, accommodate our material needs, etc., in a more kind of like, say, nice way, coated, very nice coated way, so to speak. But it's to release us entirely. The Prabhupada has started this ISKCON society to create a facility. It may not be there in the beginning, and most people won't even recognize it, but it's actually to release us entirely from this material conditioning or this material world. So today being the anniversary, the 48th anniversary of the incorporation of ISKCON in 1966, July, Srila Prabhupada incorporated this society officially in New York. We're going to read something from the Prabhupada Leelamrita about this very significant event. I guess in 2 years' time there'll be a big some big arrangements made in ISKCON to honor this event on the 50th anniversary of this occasion. Because many of the devotees, some of the devotees who were there at that time, are still present on this planet. And in 100 years' time, I don't think any of those devotees will be physically present. Some of them are still present. They may not have been present in 60 years' time, we don't know. But certainly at the moment, there's a good chance that some of them will still be physically with us in a couple of years' time to recount what it was like when Prabhupada was in New York in 1966, a lone ranger, so to speak, alone, basically, with a few young boys and girls who really knew next to nothing about the real meaning of Krishna consciousness, some sentiments of attraction to Prabhupada and to the chanting and so on, the prasadam, but not much more. not really understanding the depths of this mission, what its real purpose is, to save the world in its darkest hour, as Prabhupada said, to save the world. Because people are so self-centered, individual, collectively self-centered, as we've been hearing, how much they put themselves or their nation or their religion in the center, and they completely, you know, miss the point, practically speaking, like children. Spoiled children always want their own way. So just the same thing happens on the national level. A little bit more sophisticated, that's all. So the whole idea to get us off of this platform, of this selfish platform, and put Krishna in the center, that's where happiness and peace lie. That's where, you know, release, freedom, liberation, call it what you will. That's where come. That's where our enemies will be killed. Krishna killed. When the devotees in Vrindavan, whenever an enemy comes, whenever a demon comes, be it, we were hearing about Keshi and Vyomasura yesterday, whoever they are, whenever these demons come, Krishna kills them. If you take shelter of Krishna, Krishna will kill the enemies. Or Balaram, they will kill the enemies. This is the process. Why do enemies come? Why do these attacks come within? Krishna wants us to take shelter of him. He doesn't want us to spend our time trying to mechanically work out how to deal with all this stuff. It will never end. There are no end of demons. This is the material world. A dirty place. And in our own heart, and Kali Yuga Prabhupada says, the demon is within our own heart. It's not that they're just coming outside. They live in the same heart. Demon and devotee, if there's any devotee manifesting, are in the same heart. When Krishna came, they were in other bodies. And they would come and they would try to attack Vrindavan or attack Krishna or whatever it is. And then the devotees would all take shelter of Krishna and Krishna would kill them. So this is the process of getting rid of Arunartas. This is the blindness not the physical one. We may be blind physically with the eyes, cannot see the physical forms. But when we're blind to this, when we're blind to the process of bhakti, of taking shelter of Krishna in every situation, and Bhagavad Gita concludes with this, in all your activities, always be dependent on me, be conscious of me in everything you do, and depend on me, always. This is the mood, this is the actual process of removal of an artist. We'll be fighting forevermore. We just have to take shelter of Krishna. We do our duty, but we take shelter of Krishna. So the demons are then killed, like this, by Krishna, when these demons come in. So the world's full of mini demons. Mini demons. For taking shelter of Krishna, Srila Prabhupada brought this movement to the Western world in order to facilitate, to make it possible for people to actually, knowingly or unknowingly, be cleansed of their association with all these demons within. All these false egos, selfish, motivated tendencies. You know, they come out. You know. It's not our nature to be angry and unnecessarily or to be lusty or greedy. That's not the soul's nature. It's just because of this false ego of wanting to be the enjoyer, which is, you know, false. It's an illusion. We are the enjoyer, but in relationship with Krishna, not separate from Krishna. To think that we can enjoy separate from Krishna. Yes, the soul has that enjoying propensity, is there in Krishna, so it's obviously there in the soul also. We're in Nandamoya Vyasa. But in this material world, we're trying to enjoy Krishna's energies without Krishna. We're Ravana. We're very Ravanas, trying to enjoy Krishna's, that which belongs to Krishna. But it doesn't belong to us, it belongs to Krishna. And the whole purpose of this ISKCON movement is to turn everything back to Krishna, including our consciousness. The Srila Prabhupada has very mercifully has given this opportunity that we can wake up. Om Jnana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. We offer our respectful obeisance unto our spiritual master who has opened our eyes which are blinded with the darkness of ignorance with the torchlight of knowledge. We're blinded with the darkness of ignorance, just like Dhritarashtra, blinded by ignorance. And the ignorance can be removed with knowledge. The doubts that arise in your heart out of ignorance should be slashed with the weapon of knowledge. We must receive this knowledge from the right source. That's the weapon by which the darkness is cut. And the enemies are cut by sometimes heavy words. Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj describes it like that. The spiritual master stands there like the executioner, ready to cut the throat of the goat And he says similarly, the sadhu with sharp words cuts through this ignorance, cuts it out. We don't like it. We don't want it. No, why? We fight back. We don't like it. We think this person's on my case. They should be properly punished. Remove them, whatever it is. But is that then, is Krishna's arranging circumstances to remove the actual enemy within us by introducing us to different situations, different people we may like or not like from our conditional perspective? But we can learn from all these situations, as Prabhupada describes, when somebody chastises us or gives us a hard time, a devotee should think, of course, from the practical, external point of view, management, all these things have to be done to keep proper systems going and so on and so forth. But internally, the devotee feels no animosity or negativity. Rather, the devotee thinks, oh, Krishna is very kind. He knows my faults. And through this other person, he's pointing out my faults. Thank you, Krishna. Instead of, why are you saying this to me? You should be banished, or whatever it is. You should be removed. Don't you know who I am? No, I don't know who you are, neither do you. About time we started working out who we are, finding out who we are. I am this and I'm that. I've been in the movement 2 minutes longer than you. You should listen to me. I got my beads one before you got your beads. I'm your senior god sister or god brother. All this rubbish. You know, so much stuff we see ourselves in the center. You know. I'm a Brahmin. I'm a Brahmin. I thought Lord Chaitanya said we weren't Brahmins. Nahom vipro na chudrapatir na pivaisho na shudro. We're none of these things. What are we? Gopi bhata pada kamalam dasa dasa anudasa. We're the servant. Servant of all. So the reason why Prabhupada encouraged us to address each other as Prabhu, come here, Prabhu. You're in trouble, Prabhu. You do that again, Prabhu. You're really going to get it. You nonsense, Prabhu. We completely forget. Don't use the term if we're going to treat each other like that. It's not like a term to slam people with. It's meant to create that mood of humility, that mood of service. Here's our merciful opportunity to serve this devotee, to serve this person. Remember, we're not masters. We're not masters. We're servants. Prabhupada, in the material world, everyone's trying to get a master's degree nowadays. Srila Prabhupada created this movement, and he awards us with servants' degrees. Not master's degrees, servants. Come and serve. One time, one devotee wrote a nice poem, early days of ISKCON. And at the end of every line, every verse, he wrote something like, dear Srila Prabhupada, I just want to become a nice devotee. Prabhupada said, it was a nice poem, except for the last line. He said, we're not interested in becoming nice devotees, he said. You change that line. We just want to become your servant. We want to become servants. That's all. If you tell your parents, or whoever it is back in India, wherever they are, what are you going to be when you finish your degree, son or daughter? I want to be a servant. Oh, excuse me, what was that? Mom, I've decided I just want to be a servant. A what? What's that? A what? A servant? What do you mean, a servant? They'll be shocked. Horrified, maybe. They'll do everything they can to knock that nonsense out of your head. Now you've got to become master. You've got to become something special. You've got to become it. IT specialist. You've got to become an engineer. A doctor. You've got to be somebody special. Somebody we can... The whole family will be proud of you. You can send money back to us also. What is this about being a servant? We haven't sent you to Melbourne to become a servant. Get back here if that's what you're... Nonsense. Now come over and try to bash it out of your head. People don't realize that this is where the real happiness lies. When we place ourselves in that position, actually you may do many things externally, but it's always in the mood of service. Always. So that was Srila Prabhupada's mood. He was always thinking Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, always in this mood of service. He was never in the mood of control or in the mood of enjoyment. He was always in the mood of how to serve. Ultimately, how to serve one's spiritual masters, one's life and soul. And that means serving Krishna. But in terms of interaction with the world and the conditioned souls therein, the mood is how to deliver these spirit souls. If we had time, we would read my favorite literature of Srila Prabhupada. We don't have time. It's called Markinay Bhagavat Dharma. It's the most amazing song. And just the heart of Srila Prabhupada. If you want to associate with Srila Prabhupada, and regularly read Markinay Bhagavat Dharma. And also prayers to the lotus feet. It's an amazing poem. And there is the heart of Srila Prabhupada. His very, you can say, his very mood and mission is capturized in that wonderful poem. Please try to take it to heart and meditate on Srila Prabhupada's just meditate on it. That poem is basically Srila Prabhupada. That is Prabhupada. Everything else is like different aspects and angles and little drops, but that's like the heart. Different limbs, different activities and so on. But that's the heart. That's the heart of our movement, that poem, Markinay Bhagavat Dharma. So we're going to go back now to 1966. I don't know where you were in 1966. You certainly weren't here, that's for sure, in this room. I don't even know if any of you were in Melbourne. Was any of you were in Melbourne in 1966? Not many of the old white-faced devotees maybe were born here. Not so many Indian people here then. Mahatma Prabhu, were you here in Melbourne in 66?
No.
No? Why not?
I came in 71.
71? Oh, you came in the early days, so you're pretty early. Well, some of you may have been in your bodies in 66, this body, but not many of you were in your bodies, I think, in 66. And Prabhupada was in New York. Obviously, no one here was in New York in 66, were they? No. Imagine what it's like. It's just a little tiny store, tiny little room in the middle of New York. I mean, what does it mean? What does it mean? It's on the 2nd Avenue, 26. If you've been there, you've seen this little store that's there. We're renting. And a little tiny store. And Prabhupada's staying in the back in a tiny little room, a couple of little rooms. And there's a few young men, mostly men, a couple of women, who are kind of saying a little bit, the hippies, a little bit interested in Prabhupada's movement. And they don't necessarily know, have a clue what Prabhupada's really up to. It's just like this cool Swami on the Lower East Side, he's kind of cool. And it's good fun. And they're going along chanting. And Prabhupada has this big idea. One time he met this subway man on the bench there near the River Hudson or somewhere. And the man, obviously a little bit pious. He asked Prabhupada, where are you from? He said, from India. And he said, asked him if what was his business here, Prabhupada. Did he have some kind of place here or some temple or what was it? Prabhupada said, yes, this is 1965 or 6, before he even started anything. And Prabhupada said, yes, we have many temples, we have many farms, we have many followers, many books, this, that, Prabhupada, schools. Prabhupada said all these things. Oh, really? But there was a little time separation. There's a time separation. So it's because Krishna fulfills the will of his pure devotee. Well, these things were going to happen. And Prabhupada put them in place. And of course, many times he said that he set the thing in motion and 50% of his work was done. He made different comments indicating that the rest of the work, even with Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he said Bhaktivinoda Thakur could have finished the whole thing up himself if he wanted, spread Krishna consciousness, but he left it to us. So Srila Prabhupada's also left it to us. But we have to surrender. The reason being is that it means If we're going to be successful, we have to become serious. We have to surrender. We have to become Krishna conscious. It's not going to happen by material expertise, material adjustments, financial input. All these things are useful, but without that actual pure surrender, they're not going to work. Neither Krishna is going to give very much anyway. It's going to be a physical, mental struggle. And when he surrenders, then accordingly, Krishna reciprocates. He'll give everything to the degree that we surrender. So Prabhupada established this movement with this in mind. And this is back in 1966. Prabhupada's in a little tiny room. There's a group of people in the room. And he's just finished his lecture. And usually at the end of the lecture, that's about it. Maybe he passes around a plate of apples. And that's like the good night. Maybe some kirtan. And then Prabhupada, that night, Prabhupada had a different purpose. He said, we shall call our society ISKCON. Prabhupada had laughed playfully when he first coined the acronym. He had initiated the legal work of incorporation that spring while still living in the Bari. But even before the legal beginning, he had been talking about his International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And so it had appeared in letters to India and in the Village Voice. A friend had suggested a title that would sound more familiar to Westerners, International Society for God Consciousness. But Prabhupada had insisted, no, Krishna Consciousness. God was a vague term, whereas Krishna was exact and scientific. God consciousness was spiritually more, God consciousness was spiritually weaker, less personal. Interesting, in Sydney, the devotees on book distribution were telling me that they've discovered that when they're distributing books now, they just tell people, this book is about Krishna. Have you heard about Krishna? And then they start preaching about Krishna. They don't use all this yoga, this thing, meditation, and stuff like that anymore. They just tell exactly what it is. And people are buying. One of the brahmacharis there averages 100 big books a day by doing that when he goes out. So people are actually familiar with Krishna. They're not afraid of Krishna anymore. The problem sometimes is we're afraid of Krishna. Almost afraid. And so afraid. People are a little more accustomed. At least that's their experience. And Prabhupada certainly wasn't afraid to talk direct. And if Westerners didn't know that Krishna was God, then the International Society for Krishna Consciousness would tell them by spreading his glories in every town and village. Krishna consciousness was Prabhupada's own rendering of a phrase from Srila Rupa Goswami's Padyavali, written in the 16th century, Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavit, to be absorbed in the mellow taste of executing devotional service to Krishna. So that's really what this movement's for. Repeat. Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavita. Not very difficult. Krishna Bhakti Rasa. What's the next word? Bhavita. Again, Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavita. Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavita. Try to remember that. If you remember nothing else from this class, try to remember that. That's the purpose of this movement. To be always absorbed in the mellows or the mellow taste of executing devotional service to the Lord. That's what this movement's for. But to register ISKCON legally as a non-profit tax-exempt religion required money and a lawyer. Liar. So Carl Jurgens had already gained some experience in forming religious, political, and social welfare groups. He was one of the young men who was coming there to Prabhupada's meetings. So he had a little bit of experience. And when he had met Srila Prabhupada on the Bari, he had agreed to help. He had contacted his lawyer, whose name was Stephen Goldsmith. And these may not be the actual names, because sometimes you can't put the actual names in print without the person's permission. But anyway, he's called like that. Stephen Goldsmith, a young Jewish lawyer with a wife and two children and an office on Park Avenue, was interested in spiritual movements. When Carl told him about Prabhupada's plans, He was immediately fascinated by the idea of setting up a religious corporation for an Indian Swami. He visited Prabhupada at 26 Second Avenue and they discussed incorporation, tax exemption, Prabhupada's immigration status and Krishna consciousness. Mr. Goldsmith visited Prabhupada several times. Once he brought his children who liked the soup the Swami cooked. They liked the soup. Actually, soup is a Sanskrit word. If you read the pastimes of the Govardhan Puja pastimes, they had the residents there, they offered Krishna soup, S-U-P. They offered soup, they offered Giriraj soup. And the word means liquid vegetables. So the word comes from Sanskrit. So when you take your soup next time, you can think, Giriraj, soup. He began attending the evening lectures where he was often the only non-hippie member of the congregation. Any non-hippies here? Mahatma, you're the only hippie here. He says, Indian hippie. Indian happy. You don't see many around nowadays. Those days, they were the only people coming to the program. If someone came, you know, with like, you know, normal clothes and short hair, they were like weird. Weirdo. So he was the only non-hippie. One evening, having completed all the legal groundwork and being ready to complete the procedures for incorporation, Mr. Goldsmith came to Prabhupada's lecture in Kirtan to get signatures for the trustees for the new society. July 11th, a little bit different because of the Vedic calendar, is not quite the same as ours, Prabhupada is lecturing. Mr. Goldsmith, wearing slacks and a shirt and tie, sits on the floor near the door, listening earnestly to the lecture despite the distracting noises from the neighborhood. Prabhupada has been explaining how scholars mislead innocent people with non-devotional interpretations of the Bhagavad Gita. And now, in recognition of the attorney's respectable presence, and as if to catch Mr. Goldsmith's attention better, he introduces him into the subject of the talk. Prabhupada speaks. I will give you a practical example of how things are misinterpreted, just like our president. He's accredited him with the term present. Mr. Goldsmith. He knows that expert lawyers by interpretation can do so many things. When I was in Calcutta, there was a rent tax passed by the government, and some expert lawyer changed the whole thing by his interpretation. The government had to reenact a whole law because their purpose was foiled by the interpretation of this lawyer. So we are not out for foiling the purpose of Krishna, for which the Bhagavad Gita was spoken. Bhagavad Gita was spoken to fulfill the purpose of Krishna, not foil it. But unauthorized persons are trying to foil the purpose of Krishna. Therefore, that is unauthorized. All right, Mr. Goldsmith, you can ask anything. It's a setup. Prabhupada had it set up. It's like sometimes when we preach, you know, you have somebody in the audience who asks the right question. You know. Sometimes you have blanks. But if you're really expert, you plan somebody in the audience who asks the right question so you get the ball moving. Or when you're on book distribution, you have not a planter, but you have somebody who goes around, you know, and you're preaching to somebody. Say, hey, is that book? Somebody just come up on a distant book. Hey, is that book about Krishna? It's fantastic. Have you got any more? Have you got any more? I read that the other day. Wow, it really changed my life. Have you got any more? And the other guy's like, good book. How much is it? Different tricks. But anyway, Prabhupada planted, not say planted exactly, that was his role, but Prabhupada had set him up. Okay, all right, Mr. Goldsmith, you can ask anything. Mr. Goldsmith stands, and to the surprise of the people gathered, he makes a short announcement asking for signers on an incorporation document for the Swami's new religious movement. What is this? Imagine, just there, just half spaced out, half intoxicated maybe, and you've never heard of this before. Prabhupada, they are present here, you can take the addresses now. Mr. Goldsmith, I can take them now, yes? Prabhupada, yes, yes, you can. Bill, you can give your address. Come on, Bill. Raphael, you can give yours. Don, Roy, Mr. Green. No one's initiated. Nobody. At the meeting, as the meeting breaks up, those called on to sign as trustees come forward, standing around in a little storefront, waiting to leaf curiously through the pages the lawyer has produced from his thin attaché case, and to sign as he directs. Yet not a soul among them is committed to Krishna consciousness. Not one of them. They hardly know what it is. Mr. Galston meets his quota of signers, a handful of sympathizers, with enough reverence towards the Swami to want to help. The first trustees who will hold office for a year until the first annual meeting of the corporation are Michael Grant, and I think you know who that is. Who knows who Michael Grant is? Mukunda Goswami, isn't that amazing? He was the first initiated and the first one to sign. And he's living here in Australia, up at New Groverton. Who puts down his name and address without even reading the document. I don't think even if they read it, they wouldn't have understood it. There's all this legal jargon. It's like when you buy some ticket or something. You know, do you read through all those dozens of pages with all the rules of the airlines? It's so small you can hardly read it anyway. Mike's girlfriend, Jan, and James Green, they were the first three. Jan became Janaki. James Green became Janardin, I think it was Jan. Canadian, French-Canadian. No one seriously intends to undertake any formal duties as trustee of the religious society, but they're happy to help the Swami by signing his fledgling society into legal existence. According to law, a second group of trustees will assume office for the second year. They're Paul Gardner, Roy, and Don. The trustees for the third year are Carol, Bill, and Raphael. None of them know exactly what the half a dozen legal-sized type pages mean, except that Swamiji is forming a society. Why? For tax exemption, in case someone gives a big donation, and for other benefits an official religious society might receive. But these purposes hardly seem urgent or even relevant for the present situation. Who's going to make donations anyway? Except maybe for Mr. Goldsmith, who has any money. But Prabhupada is planning for the future, and he's planning for much more than just tax exemptions. He's trying to serve his spiritual predecessors and fulfill the scriptural prediction of a spiritual movement that is to flourish for 10,000 years in the midst of this age of Kali, within the vast Kali Age, a period which is to last 432,000 years, the 1960s are but an insignificant moment. The Vedas describe that the time of the universe revolves through a cycle of four seasons. I'll jump over there. Prabhupada has begun the International Society of Krishna Consciousness with a vision that soars off to the end of the millennium and beyond, yet with his 2 feet solidly on the ground, Prabhupada has begun. He has many practical responsibilities, paying the rent, incorporating his society, paving the way for a thriving worldwide congregation of devotees, yet he doesn't see his humble beginning as limiting the greater scope of his divine mission. He knows that everything depends on Krishna, so whether he succeeds or fails is up to the Supreme. He is only to try. The purposes stated within ISKCON's Articles of Incorporation reveal Prabhupada's thinking. They were 7 points, similar to those given in the prospectus for the League of Devotees he formed in Jhansi, India. Way back in this time in the 50s in Jhansi, he also formed a society, the League of Devotees. And basically he put down the same purposes in that League of Devotees, although the League of Devotees did not actually develop very much. It was the foundation of ISKCON. That attempt had been unsuccessful, yet his purposes remained unchanged. That was in 1953 in Jhansi, he did that. Seven purposes, this is what Prabhupada said, 7 purposes of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. It's a good idea to know what they are. What's the purpose of this movement? What's the purpose of this movement? Pardon? For preaching Krishna consciousness, definitely. So the practical things Prabhupada also puts down here in his 7 purposes, how to achieve that purpose, how to spread Krishna consciousness, fulfilling Lord Chaitanya's mission to spread the holy name in every town and village. Prabhupada, the whole movement is for that purpose. That's what it's for. So the seven purposes of the International Society of Krishna Consciousness. One, to systematically propagate spiritual knowledge to society at large and to educate all people in the techniques of spiritual life in order to check the imbalance of values in life and to achieve real unity and peace in the world based on the spiritual platform. Two, to propagate a consciousness of Krishna as it is revealed in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Three, to bring the members of society together with each other and nearer to Krishna. To bring them together with each other and nearer to Krishna, the prime entity. Thus to develop the idea within the members and humanity at large that each soul is part and parcel of the quality of Godhead, Krishna. Four, to teach and encourage the Sankirtan movement, congregational chanting in the holy name of God, as revealed in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Five, to erect for the members and for society at large a holy place of transcendental pastimes dedicated to the personality of Krishna. Six, to bring the members closer together for the purpose of teaching a simpler and more natural way of life. Seven, with a view towards achieving the aforementioned purposes, to publish and distribute periodicals, magazines, books, and other writings. And these are the seven practical steps that Srila Prabhupada has written in his, or has had written in his incorporation of ISKCON. And they're all based on that principle. What was that again? What does that mean? Based on Rupa Goswami. What was it? Krishna. Yes, Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavita. To be always absorbed in the mellows of devotional service to Krishna. It's the purpose of the whole thing. It's the purpose of the whole thing. It's the purpose of life. Regardless of what ISKCON's charter members thought of the society's purposes, Prabhupada saw them as imminent realities. As Mr. Rubin, always mentioned here. That's his name, Mr. Rubin. The subway conductor who had met Prabhupada on a Manhattan Park bench in 1965 had noted, he seemed to know that he would have temples filled up with devotees. There are temples and books, he said. They are existing. They are there. But the time is separating us from them. The first purpose mentioned in the charter was propagation. Preaching was the word Prabhupada most often used. For him, preaching had a much broader significance than mere sermonizing. Preaching meant glorious, selfless adventures on behalf of the Supreme Lord. You have that book. What's that great adventure? What's it called in Australian? Karma Prabhu produced one book. The Great Transcendental Adventure or something. What's it called? No, that's Harry Story. Karma Prabhu, the book about Prabhupada in Australia and the Australian Yatra. Come on, you're all from Australia. The Great Transcendental Adventure. Yeah, probably not even. If you haven't read that book, you're in trouble. You must get the book and you must read it. You're living in Australia, come on. If you don't read that, then how the heck are we going to spread Krishna consciousness? We're on our doorstep. It's like living in your own home and you don't know where the toilet is. Mum, where's the toilet? Where are you from, Mum? Is this your house, Mum? You live here? To know our own house. The first purpose, yeah, preaching. Great adventure. Lord Chaitanya preached by walking all over southern India and causing thousands of people to chant and dance with him in ecstasy. Lord Krishna preached Bhagavad Gita while standing with Arjuna in his chariot on the battle of Kurukshetra. Lord Buddha had preached. Lord Jesus had preached. Jesus had preached. And all pure devotees preached. ISKCON's preaching would achieve what the League of Nations and United Nations had failed to achieve, real unity and peace in the world. It has to start at home with their own hearts. ISKCON workers would bring peace to a world deeply afflicted by materialism and strife. They would systematically propagate spiritual knowledge, knowledge of the non-sectarian science of God. It was not that a new religion was being born in July of 1966. Rather, the eternal preaching of Godhead, known as Sankirtan, was being transplanted from east to west. The society's members would join together, and by hearing the teaching of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, and by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, they would come to realize that each was a spirit soul, eternally related to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They would then preach to the humanity at large, especially through Sankirtan, the chanting of the holy name of God. ISKCON would also erect a holy place of transcendental pastimes dedicated to the personality of Godhead. Was this something beyond the storefront? Yes, certainly. He never thought small. He seemed to know that he would have temples filled up with devotees. He wanted ISKCON to demonstrate a simple, more natural way of life. Just like Prabhupada thought of the villages of India, where people lived just as Krishna lived, was most conducive to developing Krishna consciousness. We mentioned that last night, where you have a lot of work to do. You have your beautiful new Nandagram. And, you know, so much could be done. We have to realize one day that, you know, this is the future of preaching Krishna consciousness. And all six purposes would be achieved by the seventh, publishing and distributing literature. That was the special instruction Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj had given to Srila Prabhupada. Specifically, he told him in 1932, if ever you get money, publish books. Certainly none of the signers saw any immediate shape to the Swami's dream, yet these seven purposes were not simply theistic rhetoric, invented to convince a few New York state government officials. Prabhupada meant to enact every item in the charter. Of course, he was now working in extremely limited circumstances. The principal place of worship, located at 26 Second Avenue in the city, county, and state of New York, was the sole headquarters for the International Society of Krishna Consciousness. Yet Prabhupada insisted that he was not living at 26 Second Avenue, New York. His vision was transcendental. His Guru Maharaj had gone out from the traditional holy places of spiritual meditation to preach in cities like Calcutta, Bombay, and Delhi. And yet Prabhupada would say that his spiritual master had not really been living in any of those cities, but was always in Vaikuntha, the spiritual world, because of his absorption in devotional service. Similarly, the place of worship, 26 Second Avenue, was not a New York storefront, a former curiosity shop. The storefront and the apartment had been spiritualized and were now a transcendental haven. Society at large would come here. The whole world could take shelter here, regardless of race or religion. Plain, small, and impoverished as it was, Prabhupada regarded the storefront as a holy place of transcendental pastimes, dedicated to the personality of Krishna. It was a world headquarters, a publishing house, a sacred place of pilgrimage, and a center from which an army of devotees could issue forth and chant the holy name of God in all the streets throughout the world. The entire universe could receive Krishna consciousness from the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, which was beginning here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. That's just whatever account is given there. By Satsrup, who at that time, Satsrup Maharaj was Stephen. He was one of those early devotees. He may not have been there that night or not, I don't know, but he was one of the early devotees. And Hare Krishna. From there, this movement still is only beginning stages. Has grown a little bit bigger than just 6th, 2nd Avenue to I don't know how many temples now, maybe 700 temples throughout the world. Prabhupada established around about 108 during his physical presence, but I believe it was about 700 now. And you know, hundreds and thousands, if not millions, of devotees throughout the world. And millions, hundreds and millions of books have been distributed. And there are restaurants, especially in Australia, schools. We have a lot of work to do. Farms are there, but again, so much to do. And there's just so much adventure, so much opportunity. So much opportunity. If you read Markane Bhagavad Dharma, we maybe feel ourselves a little bit more empowered and inspired to, you know, surrender to Srila Prabhupada's teachings and become more instrumental. Stop trying to battle with our enemies all the time, but rather take shelter in devotional service. Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavita, mellows of pure devotional service to the Lord, instead of the mellows of our mind. When we have a beautiful Aindrupal Vrindavan mellows, much of the time the mellows which are going on inside of our minds are not quite Vrindavan mellows. We have to make Vrindavan, as Prabhupada said. Vrindavan means the place with no envy. There is no envy. Everything is for Krishna. And that's what Prabhupada brought. How to transform this world for Krishna's pleasure. Not change the world, transform the world. And it starts with transforming our consciousness, whatever it takes to do that. And then automatically everything else follows. If we have the opportunity to transform our consciousness, then we can be instrumental in fulfilling these purposes of ISKCON. Otherwise we're just putting our own perception on it, by our own material conditioning, how to fulfill, how to establish one ashram. As long as we have material conceptions, we can't really see the picture. It's blurred. And you get a blurred result. Okay, we're finished there today. We have some different programs. I guess all the devotees who are going to the retreat with Burijan Prabhu are there. And I think here in Melbourne we have some program in the western suburbs today, some kind of Rath Yatra festival of some kind. And then there's a program here this afternoon, so we have a lot to get on with. And we'll be here till Wednesday evening. I don't know, maybe giving classes, or Burijan Prabhu will be giving classes, I guess. One of us, whatever it may be. Hare Krishna, any questions? Back to Bhagavatam tomorrow morning. It's also Bhagavatam, yes. Any other comments? Was that your question?
No.
Oh, okay.
I was just wondering, is there some verses from the scripture which we can help to establish, like when you say that Krishna is supreme and not the other forms?
Nice point, very good point. Yep. Of course, Krishna's many manifestations, many expansions. We don't argue over these things. Some people say that Vishnu is supreme, Shiva is supreme, this, that, the other. In different situations, different entities, or different expansions of the same supreme personality of Godhead may appear supreme. It's like in Australia, your prime minister's, you know, in one sense he's not, but in one sense he's the supreme. The boss is supposed to be. But nothing is insignificant. Just that doesn't mean anything if you're in England or America, whatever it is. They have supremacy over certain territory or certain places or whatever. So similarly, in different corners of the creation or different aspects, spiritual, material, different expansions of the Lord or his empowered expansions or empowered representatives are supreme. So one has to find out, first of all, one has to know what is supreme, and then see who fits that position. Going to Parashara Muni, supreme is one who is six main categories, all beautiful, all knowledgeable, all opulent, all strength, strong, all famous, and all renounced. No one is more renounced, beautiful, etc., etc. So one has to see that. The supreme is also many, many different references there. As far as verses go, verses like Ete Changsha Kalapam Bungsa, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam, of all the various forms of Bhagavan or expansion, Krishna is the origin. Ete Changsha Kalapam Bungsa, he's the original personality. Lord Brahma's prayers, Brahma Samhita, of course, is also there. There are different references, but you know, when you're presenting in this material world specifically, to people who were very conditioned, like Prabhupada didn't refer, but it was referring there to Buddha. Lord Buddha is not preaching God consciousness at all, really, in one sense. But he's nonetheless, he's preaching according to time and circumstance to help people in the conditioned state come to the released, become released from this conditioned state. So they reveal up to a certain point which people can digest. So as far as explanation or understanding of Krishna's original form, it's rarely, rarely made available to people. In the Bhagavad Gita we see Arjuna, after hearing the four seed verses of Bhagavad Gita, who accepts Krishna as the Supreme. He said, not only I, but Vyasadeva, Devala, Narada, and all these great rishis also accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. We even see, of course, there may be different expansions of the Lord. Lord Narayan is also Krishna. Lord Krishna is also Krishna. It's just another form to perform various acts of creation or a relationship, experiencing different mellows of pastimes and so on. The Lord takes unlimited forms. And he's, and they're all incorporated, you can say, in the absolute truth. That's why the Lord has come again. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the five features. The absolute truth is supreme. It's not like here's the supreme and everything else is separated. The various expansions are also part of that supreme. They're just different. Like we ourselves, you know, sometimes when we're doing different activities, you dress differently. You behave differently when you go out to the sports field or when you're going to the beach or when you're going to the office or when you're at school or whatever it is. We dress according to the position and behave according to the situation. So all the expansions of the Lord are for that purpose. There's no disagreement. There's countless prayers, you know, of various expansions, various individuals establishing Krishna's supremacy. I don't have them at my fingertips. You can ask. They can easily be found in ISKCON websites and different things about establishing Krishna as the original Sarvakarana Karanam, Nadiradiya Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam. That is the origin of origins, so to speak, the fountainhead, the source of everything. And of course, Krishna himself establishes that in the Bhagavad Gita and Arjuna. Accepts that, but he doesn't just accept on his own account. He quotes all of the many great sages, Narayana Puru, Yuktat, Shankaracharya also states Govindam, what's that, Bhajagovinda, 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 Mundamate, his various prayers, even of Shankaracharya, what he writes his, on the Bhagavad Gita, he writes his, what's it called, the Gita Mahatmya, and in different places, great personalities, scriptures. Vedas don't those mentions are also there, but they're like in the midst of everything else, because mainly the Vedas deal with the modes of nature. So people within the modes of nature need to know how to understand the workings of this material world and how to elevate their consciousness. So not so much is mentioned there of the transcendental worlds. More in the Puranas are full of references. And there's six Puranas in goodness, ignorance six, passion six. The ones in ignorance and passion don't so much in, because they're for more people who are clouded by those modes. So they're more emphasis on the activities and the expansions of the Lord to worship in those modes, which will help elevate them. In the mode of goodness, the Vishnu Purana and the Padma Purana and other Puranas in the mode of goodness, more emphasis there on the worship of Vishnu and Krishna and so on. Let's do a little bit of research. I'm sure some devotees here, there are some articles, there are some printouts of various verses from different scriptures which establish, let's say, the original position of Krishna in relationship to his various expansions, that he is the origin of all other expansions. He's in Krishna in an analytical way. Lord Chaitanya analyzed with Venkatabhata, who worshipped Lord Narayan, that Krishna possesses opulences in full, whereas Lord Narayan has. There are certain limitations there. There are certain aspects of the... You can read also in the Nectar of Devotion the qualities of Krishna, that even Lord Narayan only possesses 60 of the 64 qualities. They don't manifest in his personality fully in Krishna. All the qualities are there. He's the possessor of all qualities in full. And if someone can help find more references, maybe you've got references available, and there they are. If you go on Vedic Base or Google or something like that, you can find these things very easy. Modern technology being used in the proper way. Anything else? Questions of demons who come. Krishna killed demons who came to Vrindavan. They are representing various anartas, some of the points we mentioned earlier, lust and greed and anger and envy and so on. Of course, any demon has all these wonderful qualities, and sometimes they're more prominent in different persons than they are in others. So yes, they're instruments. The Lord uses them as instruments also. Pastimes. Demons are a part of them. Some of the demons are actually devotees taking the role of demons. Some of them are actually demons. But they're there to prepare the way so that one becomes eligible to enter into the inner pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because as long as those envious, demoniac coverings are there in our hearts, we cannot enter into the spiritual world. One has to be Vishayacharya Sevasima. Freed of these material attachments or tendencies. So these demons, although they're acting on their own account, you can say their nature is such. They do, and these are only the prominent ones, and obviously there's countless other demons who also took part in these pastimes. Prabhupada said before, taking prasadam sometimes, most days Krishna would kill one or two demons. There's only about 16 mentioned in the Krishna book. So there's not many. They're just the prominent ones. And they're specific ones who are like almost like indirect potencies of the Lord, because these are there's the direct and the indirect relationships with Krishna. And when the indirect relationships with Krishna become prominent, you've got a problem. It's like in cooking. If the spices are more prominent than the vegetables, you've got a problem. And that's one of the problems. Sometimes the prasadam is so spicy that half the those who do take it, it is disturbing, and those who don't like it can't eat it. So that's the main thing about the preparation is the vegetable, not the spice. The spice is supposed to enhance. The same thing in kirtan. The main thing is the holy name, not the instruments. The instruments are to enhance the emphasis on the holy name, not to cover over it. Like if someone plays the djembe too loud, it's a disturbance, and they should be kindly asked to stop. Because it's overwhelming the holy name, and maybe it's touched with false ego as well, but it's overwhelming the holy name, and it's also sometimes clouding, or that's overwhelming the Madongan cartels who have come particularly to accompany the sound, the holy name of the Lord. Jambi didn't come down for that purpose, trying to pick it up, bring it up to that purpose, but it didn't come down from the spiritual world for that purpose. Engaged, any instrument can be used, but you have to be used properly. So everything's like that. So these demons, the ones that are mentioned, which Bhaktivinoda Thakura mentioned in Chaitanya Shikshamrita, are specifically like acting, whether they themselves are devotees playing that part, or whether they're demons empowered in that way, they represent those particular activities. Now, people in general, they have different tendencies. Individual. So whether Krishna's chosen those particular persons or whatever, but that's what they've got. That's their nature. It so happens that Krishna utilizes them, as he does. We mentioned earlier, when we meet different people, Krishna utilizes that opportunity to cleanse our heart by introducing us to people who may insult us, who may ignore us, who may even be aggressive towards us, to help remove various anarthas within our hearts. So these arrangements are also made by the Lord, and by hearing these particular activities submissively from the right source, it helps to reduce those tendencies within our own heart, should they be there. And that's why before entering into rasa, lila, before entering into the more, let's say, intimate pastime, a certain number of demons are killed. They're mostly killed during the Kumara and Pagunda ages of Krishna. Before we can enter, they're also killed during Trishula. It's not that there's not still demons, but a certain amount of demons have to be killed before we can really start to really enter or relish a little bit more deeply this devotional service or Krishna Katha. So Krishna kills them, so before we read those pastimes first, they're more maybe relevant to us, killing demons. We have our little demon, so it's the effect, it purifies us. Just like when we hear about with the Rasa Lila too, if you're on that little bit more advanced platform, you can lose desire for lusty tendencies in this material world by hearing that pastime. But if we're too lusty, then by hearing that we become more lusty. It depends. One has to be on the eligibility to receive that medicine, so to speak. It has to be there. So there's Krishna's mercy. So many things going on at once in these pastimes. Fulfilling Krishna's desires, releasing these demons, performing wonderful pastimes which we can hear about, and removing of our anartas, and enlivening all the devotees of Braj, who teach us how to take shelter of Krishna. So many things going on at once. Fulfilling Krishna's mission in this world to remove irreligion and establish religion, and kill the demons and so on. Vinasha, Ajitishvitam. Okay, we'll finish there. Shiva Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama Rama. Shiva Prabhupada Ki Jai.